This old man slowly walks up. He stops and he's watching us, right? Shakes his head. He goes, I'm not going to learn anything here, and walks away. And that pretty much summarizes how well I play golf.
Welcome to this episode of Smells Like Identity Hygiene, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of cybersecurity, focusing on everything you need to know about identity hygiene and access management. I'm your host, Katie, joined by my co-host, Rosario. In today's episode, Control-Alt-Defeat, Gaming the System of Prioritizing Security Risk, is a must-listen. In the spotlight is the healthcare industry's unique challenge of managing security risks. We're diving into how to set up effective controls, prioritize violations, and transform data into actionable insights. Helping us navigate these waters is Neil Heimowitz, Senior Manager of Technology Operations at Northwell Health, bringing his wealth of experience to the table. Expect to leave with strategies that can help make your security framework not just robust, but proactive. And don't rush off when we wrap up the cybersecurity talk. Stay for our non-security question of the day to see a different side of us. This episode is packed with insights for anyone keen on strengthening their organization's cybersecurity and identity hygiene posture. Let's get started.
My name is Katie. I am your host, and I'm here with my co-host, Rosie, and we are so glad to have our special guest, Neil Heimowitz, the Senior Manager for Technology Operations at Northwell Health with us today. Welcome, Neil.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Thanks, Neil, for joining us today. So today's topic is around controls and violations and how, when it comes to infrastructure, it can ultimately cause some of the security issues that ultimately cause breaches. Can you talk about what are controls and what are violations as it relates to cybersecurity as well as identity hygiene?
So we have documented controls, like actual, like, you know, this is a policy, but then obviously you have to also be able to back those up. So we have software controls or different systems that are in place, DLP, scanning. We have different systems that are monitoring for email hygiene, for file access. We just had a request asking for a report of who may have accessed a specific folder on their departmental share. We do have auditing in place to determine who may have accessed a specific folder at a given time. I was going to chime in actually in the conversation with, well, I think we can actually use Sphereboard to tell us who has permission to that folder. But we definitely need to have not just written policies, because we know that in today's world, you have to resolve people problems with technology. It'd be wonderful if we could just tell people, don't do this, and then they don't do it. But that's not the case. You know, even just for my background coming up as a messaging engineer, we have to have things in place where we have a policy that says, do not send HIPAA information over email. But yet we know that they do. So we have encryption systems in place to encrypt anything that is detected as having PII or PHI in the email when it goes out. Then we get people who complain that, you know, obviously you get false positive. I'd rather take the rare occasion of a false positive than send out data unencrypted because people just didn't follow the policy. Same thing with file sharing, right? We have Microsoft Teams, we have SharePoint Online, we have OneDrive, and these all are HIPAA compliant. So we have the ability to share data with external entities, with internal people as well, obviously, and feel protected by sharing those files that way.
And I guess it kind of reminds me of like people thinking like, why do we have labels on bleach bottles? Like somebody did it. And
Don't iron your clothes while wearing them. You know, that's on an iron.
I know you mentioned a couple of the challenges that you go through. And what is it about these controls and violations that make them so important? What are the things that could happen if they're not met?
Yeah, I mean, it's insane to think about how often you get notified by your credit card company, your bank, your Amazon, or what have you, that there was a breach, right? Your password or your identity may have been compromised. And then exponentially take that into the medical world, right? Into the hospital system that I work for. If your medical information or your personal information were to become available on the interwebs, so to speak, anybody could have that information and make use of it. And it would be not just horrible for the person it happened to, but in turn, it would be horrible for our company. It would be horrible for whoever ends up taking the blame for that occurring. If you look at some of the companies that have already been hacked in the world, and you're like, how did they get hacked? If they can get hacked, certainly we can get hacked. When I first got into computers, and I was working with, and again, I don't want to age myself, but I was working with Novell, you know, trying to explain to them the server and the workstations. And I was like, think of it like the mothership and a bunch of little, you know, scouting ships that go out. So you're working in your little scouting ship, and then you have an issue. Well, you don't want to bring that back to the mothership, so we have to sever you. Unfortunately, it's you might die, but it's worth saving millions for the loss of, you know, of one. And we have to think of it the same way, right? In the world of security, you know, you have to be able to protect the greater good by severing, you know, off and fixing what's there, but you have to be able to isolate it. So the network segmentation would be a way of doing that. We have to have things in place to prevent that data from getting out so that everybody can feel protected and, you know, sure that they can hand over their personal information to their doctor, to their hospital, to their whatever, and not have to worry about somebody else getting that, obtaining that.
I mean, obviously there's a ton of different places outside of your own business that you can't control that do have integrations and pieces in your business. And we're talking about how people's heart, their pacemakers were being hacked and how scary that is, that yeah. Like someone can literally hack your pacemaker. And
what's weird is that, honestly, I think before that even happened in reality, there was that was on a TV show or a movie where, you know, a lot of these things that people come up with in real life today started off as a TV show or a movie, right? Think about cell phones. Right. That was Star Trek. You know,
right.
I know I saw that in a movie years ago where someone was killing people by hacking into the computer systems that were managing their pacemaker.
So, Neil, what are the biggest challenges with enforcing these controls? We know why they're important, right? We talked about a lot of the controls that are in place that you have in place. We talked about why they're important, but why is it so hard to enforce these controls and to, number one, find them, and number two, actually do something about them?
Well, I think it's twofold, right? So obviously, we were just talking about external entities that you might do business with. We have no control over what they're doing. So we have to protect ourselves, enforcing controls. We don't allow third-party companies to directly connect to us unless we have controls in place. We have a VPN connection that can be severed at any point, right? If even just from an email perspective, right? We don't allow third-party companies to send email out as us unless there's an agreement in place already, and we've set up the SPF and DKIM records to allow them to do that, right? There's a hard fail on those items. From an internal perspective, it's tough, partly because human nature, right? The human nature is I need to do my job. And even though I know this might be against the rules to do this, right? So I'm going to do it and then possibly, you know, deal with the consequences later. Or ignorance, right? I didn't know that I wasn't allowed to do that. Sending a patient information over email unencrypted, right? Obviously, like I said before, we have systems in place to try to mitigate that. That's, you know, detects any email that has PII or PHI in it and encrypts it. But you know, oh, I didn't know I wasn't allowed to use my personal email to send patient information to somebody, right? So, I mean, we have said we block you from being able to do that from on-premise. You cannot get to your personal email from on-premise, you know, things like that. It's just, you're trying to do your job. You're trying to do well, or, you know, do good for somebody else. And you either A, don't, you know, think this is more important, or B, you don't realize that what you're doing is wrong. And we have to have things in place to protect you from yourself. I guess that's one way to look at it.
Are there elements about either the fact that it's a large hospital or just the medical field in general that make it exceptionally harder compared to like your previous experience where it wasn't kind of in the medical field?
Yeah, I think in a way it's almost good and bad, right? I look at it as when I worked for a different company years ago, you know, we made makeup, and something would happen, a system would go down, and everyone would freak out. And I'm like, financially, yes, it could be impactful to the company, etc. I understand that. But here it's, you have lives on the line. Right. So if a system goes down because of a security breach or what have you, that could impact the saving of lives. That could impact, you know, somebody's health. It's complete. If a system goes down and it's circle the wagons and all hands on deck, everybody's good with that because they realize the, what they're working toward, right? It is difficult to say, oh, man, I just put in a full day. I can't help. You know, you're not going to do that. You realize what's on the line. And there's more to protect, right? There's your personal medical information. There's your personal information on your credit history that's obviously, you know, kept, you know, on internal systems and things like that. So there's so much more to protect. And yes, it is a much larger, yeah. Whereas the company I worked before was global, a very large company, I thought at the time, number of people we touch here is far greater, right? The number of employees, the size of the company, we do have a huge impact on this region that we serve. And it's very important to make sure that we maintain a very secure posture, you know, to protect their data, to protect their information.
Absolutely. And even talking about that, the fact that you guys are smaller, but you touch so many more places, and we see even small and medium firms constantly inundated with violations. So how, at your size and with the scale of people that you touch and the risk that you have associated with you, how do you guys prioritize which of these things to handle first? What risks do you tackle? What controls? What violations? How do you know?
To me, it all comes almost like out of a water cannon, right? They're like, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got to do this, we got to do this. And there is no real prioritization of what to do first. It's just, it all has to get done, which is partly why we have such a large security team, you know, working here at Northwell. There are departments, honestly, sometimes we're the those of us on the outside, we're like, which group do we contact for this, for, you know, in security? All right. Is it engineering? Is it operations? Is it architecture? Is it, you know, management, you know, who are we supposed to talk to for information on this topic? Because there's just so many people working in that department, but because we're such a large organization, and because of what we're protecting, they need that many people. They need that many groups.
So the security team will hand you a whole bunch of issues that need to be addressed from an infrastructure perspective. How do you go about prioritizing kind of what is the most critical? Do you then have to analyze what they're telling you? Okay, all of these are number one priority, but obviously you can't do them all at once. So right. In what are some of the things that you do to kind of organize that workload to say, okay, I'm going to tackle this, then this, then this, then this, or yeah, do you like have to do it all at once?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. I'll give you an example. We do an annual security assessment with Microsoft every year, a SOA, Security Optimization Assessment. We did this past year, we actually had a very, let's say, quick assessment or quick remediation, because we've been doing it annually. So we've already resolved previous issues that they've identified. Obviously, every year, new issues come up that we need to control. But what we do is we do the low-hanging fruit first, because we can get those quick kills off the list. Anything that's going to take multiple teams' involvement, that's going to take change control to get approvals, you know, even the quick kills go through change control, but it's more of a documentation of what we're doing versus multiple. If it affects multiple teams, multiple departments, multiple locations, you obviously have to go through a more rigorous process of getting approval.
What are some of the key data points that you use to determine which one of those are quick kills, which ones of those are going to take longer? How do you identify those more easily?
For me, it's about who is involved, who needs to be involved, right? If it's something my team can just quickly take care of by documenting a change and taking care of, you know, like running a PowerShell script to run it, to flip a switch on a setting, right? Versus we actually have to put a system in place or, you know, do some testing of a new service or a new system to determine whether or not that is going to remediate the issue. You know, anything that's going to take testing and takes a lot longer. Let's just say we have hundreds every, you know, as we acquire new entities, we get domain names, right, that come along with those entities, the email domain names. So we ran a report. One of the things that came up was, you know, you have 50 extra domain names that may not be used. So quick, easy kill. We ran a report to determine over the last 6 months, 9 months, 12 months, how many messages were coming in and out of those domains. Well, we have these 10 domains that have no messages for the last year. Do a quick kill on those, document the change, contact the owner of that entity that has that had that domain that when they came in, that one can go right off the plate, right? We can take kill that off the list. So yeah, that's basically how I do it, is the number of teams that have to be involved and the level of effort determines whether it's a quick kill or not. Doesn't necessarily say that this one is more important than the other, but just what we can take care of quicker.
So Neil, can you talk a little bit about infrastructure issues or, you know, tech debt, how ultimately that will cause a security issue, like how a misconfiguration could ultimately cause a breach or cause a control to fail or a violation?
Domain admin rights for an example, right? Yes, it gives your engineers the ability to do everything they need to do their job. They have the ability to log on to servers. They have the ability to access data on a file server, what have you. And that would be an easy thing to just have in place. But where's the risk behind that? Now you've got every engineer that works for you. If there is a breach of any of their accounts, now that person's domain admin account has been compromised and they have access to everything. If you don't keep track of who has permissions where and how those permissions have been assigned and how they access those permissions, you know, you end up with greater potential for a larger breach, which is why we now have systems. Figure, go back, you know, to when I first started working in computers, you had two options. You had a regular account or with regular permissions, basically, and you had some limited ability to set file permissions or set server access permissions, and then you had the full-on domain admin. Now we have so many more different things in place that we can give. We have the ability to elevate permissions as needed with a PIM product, or we have the ability to change passwords at will. Like you log into a system, it tells you what your domain admin account, your privileged access account password is for the day or for the hour, whatever you set that to. So we have so many more controls in place that weren't available in back in the day, that if you don't take advantage of them, yeah, you run that risk of just becoming complacent and allowing your system to fall behind with its security stance. Like I said, we acquire entities constantly, new hospitals, new doctors' practices, and you're taking on all of what they've got in place for however many years. One of the first things that we do right after the account team that goes in to try to, you know, pitch you should become part of Northwell, the security team goes in. That's like the first line of attack, is the security guys go in to say, all right, let's do an assessment here and figure out what we need to tighten up before we attach them to our network and then do any type of a migration of their accounts into our system and what have you. The security team goes in first to do an assessment. You know, I can think back years and years ago, we did one where they went in and it was easier for the doctor's office to give them full on domain admin privileges so they could log on to any workstation they wanted to in the doctor's office and they can have access to all the shares on the server. Yeah, that's great, but that is not secure. You know, so that's the first thing you go in and you take care of is the security, because you don't want to bring in their tech debt to yours.
In my head, I was imagining all of those shows that you watch where there's the doctors that like sneak in, or the people who sneak in behind the doctors and like log in and are accessing like patient information. It just feels like almost like a TV show type thing, but it's terrifying because it's like real life.
I can't stand when you watch a movie and someone's like, all right, I need to hack into this doctor's office. I'm in. You know, it's like, come on. You know, they have some controls in place. You know,
and apparently doctor coats are readily available, right? Yes. All you have to do is walk in, go into a closet, get the coat, and everyone thinks you're a doctor, right?
Yes, correct. That's put on the badge. Doesn't matter what you're wearing, anything else you have on. Right. You put on that and doctor coat.
They'll prep you for the operating room. Get right in there.
You have all these moving pieces where it used to just be two options that you had. Now you've got probably hundreds, if not thousands, of different ways that you can approach things. How important is it to keep all of this historical data and this historical information when it comes to maintaining these controls and violations?
Historical data, meaning the actual like patient data and things like that? Is that what you're referring to?
The changes you've made, the accesses that people have had, and just how that has changed over time, so that you know, I guess, to make better future decisions and also to be able to access it. And Rosie's making a face. What is the face, Rosie?
No. You got it.
Yeah, okay,
it's really around, just kind of seeing that what you're doing is effective, right, over time.
Right. Well, obviously, you do keep audit logs forever. or for a long period of time. It feels like forever. You know, sometimes you may think, oh, we should get rid of this because, you know, we don't need it anymore. But in reality, to your point, Caitlin, you have to be able to look back and see what you've changed over time to make sure that that's had a positive effect, right? If all of a sudden you realize that there's a problem and you don't know what you've done, this is one of the, I used to teach A+, right? A long time ago. When I first got into computers, I was working for a computer school. And one of the first things I took pride in was teaching people how to troubleshoot. And you can't troubleshoot if you make too many changes at once and don't keep track of what you've been changing. So it is important to keep that historical record of what has changed over time so that if there is a problem, now you can look back and see, okay, we did this, we did with, oh, wait, we shouldn't have done that. And that's what caused this problem 5 years later, what have you. Same thing when troubleshooting any computer problem, right? You can't just say, all right, let's try changing this, 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 and this and see if it fixes it. Well, now you don't know what fixed it because you changed three things at the same time. I do feel documentation is extremely important and keeping that record of that is important. Keeping your data, maybe I differ from other people. I do think, you know, having taken e-discovery classes way back when, you know, you should retain less data in order to prevent a breach of that data. There are people who feel the opposite of that. They're like, no, we need that data in case there's a lawsuit. We need to be able to show that we still, you know, we have this. And I'm like, well, the alternative of that is in case of a lawsuit, you don't have that data anymore because you've shown that you've gotten rid of it. So there's two schools of thought on that. And plus, there are different regulations in place, right? So my previous company, we were subject to Sarbanes-Oxley. You know, and there, I believe at the time, the philosophy with SOX was if you can prove that you have a policy in place to hold data for X number of months, years, what have you, and you can show that that's what you're adhering to, then you're good. But in the medical world, it's completely different. There's a rule for pediatric data. There's a rule for regular adult medical data. There's a rule for research data. There's like so many policies and rules in place that you have to have controls in place to protect all that data for that many years based on the content of the data.
A lot of people, and one of the things that have been more popular that everyone's talking about lately, governance and regulation and what frameworks work the best or what are different people having to adhere to. And obviously controls and violations are going to change based off of if you're making lipstick or working for a hospital. And what frameworks and what regulations and controls do you adhere to? NIST, I assume, to make sure that you're protecting your patients and your doctors and yourselves and just everybody.
NIST is huge for most of the security stance, right, is, you know, when it, even just for password policies, things like that, boils down to how long you hold data and how you keep track of data. Like, for instance, I mentioned early on in our conversation, many times you're able to ask your doctor, can you just email that to me? And a good doctor will say, no, I can't email that to you, right? I can send you a link to a portal, which we now, you know, obviously back in the day didn't have that, but now I can send you a link to a portal and you can log in with your secure account to that portal to get your information. I can't just email you the information. So, you know, but there have to be things in place in case somebody does that, right? In case somebody does, you say, oh, sure, I'll just email that to you. Believe it or not, a lot of doctor's offices still use fax machines. We still have fax systems here because that's just the way, you know, they do things. Personally, I don't agree with using a fax, you know, but I know I have doctors that I go to that are outside of Northwell that still fax. Do you have a fax number I can send this to? No, I don't have a fax number you can send that to.
In every session, we have one question that is completely unrelated to security, completely okay. Unrelated to everything we've talked about. So we've gotten you very focused on something so we can throw you in a different direction. Today, the question is, if you were about to be in the zombie apocalypse and you had to choose one celebrity to be beside you and fight with you through the zombie apocalypse. And celebrity meaning has to be recognizable because Rosie went into he gets his what ifs and
celebrity or their character that they've played in a TV or movie.
Ooh, that is a very good question.
That so is celebrity, a good question.
It would be Bear Grylls, right?
Oh, yeah.
Because survival, you know, like we could live off of the jungle, whatever, you know, I would think, you know, not that I really want to dangle off of the cliff that I see him taking people on his show, but I think he would be somebody I would want to have with me to survive the zombie apocalypse. Character on, and I have to go with John Wick.
I'm a little surprised that you immediately had that on deck. You know, I still don't have an answer. You immediately she didn't even finish, and you already had two answers.
Real life person who haha, he is both a real life person and a celebrity, but I would choose Jackie Chan because I just feel like he is someone who both has done these weird acting things in movies and also can do it in real life. Celebrity persona would probably be MacGyver. MacGyver always gets you out of those weird, sticky situations.
Jackie Chan now, or Jackie Chan when he was making all those martial arts movies?
I don't know. I feel like he's still just as badass. He's just now seasoned. I feel
Yeah,
like
I would
he's
just be worried to be like, ha! Oh, my back. Right.
Schmedium Jackie Chan. I choose
Right.
between now and between when he was in his prime.
You want some experience, but not too much experience where he's going to
Right.
be a hindrance. So I still don't have my my real person, but I did think of a character.
Okay.
Superman. It's so obvious.
Oh, yeah.
He can fly you away from danger. He can probably kill all the zombies real quick. He could even fly around the Earth and reverse the zombie apocalypse, find the source of the zombie apocalypse, destroy that and save the world.
Gosh, an ultimate solution, not even just defense,
Right.
solving the problem.
My
Yeah.
only
And
issue
I
with
don't.
that answer is he has a moral compass. And I don't know if he would feel bad about killing zombies because they used to be people.
But he'd feel
Hopefully.
compelled to protect me.
Correct.
Listen, I don't want to tell him how to do his job.
Right.
If he wants to save the zombies and save me, that's fine. As long as, saving me is part of the plan. I don't want to micromanage Superman. I have
I like the way you do that, but I would actually do it this way if I were thinking
It's like,
about
listen, Superman,
it.
can we talk about how you saved me in that scenario? I know you're trying to save all the zombies, but really, I mean, what are we saving here? I'm not going to do that. I'm going to let him do his thing.
You know what? That's it. Just credits. That's it. You know what? You fall off this cliff. We don't know what happens to you.
That's a wrap for today's episode. Control-Alt-Defeat, gaming the system of prioritizing security risk. A big shout out to Neil Heimowitz for his expert insights on setting effective controls and making data actionable, especially in the crucial field of healthcare. Don't forget, we're going to dive deeper into this topic on our live webinar on the 25th. It's an invaluable chance to explore today's themes and ask your burning questions. Make sure to register now to deepen your understanding and fortify your defenses. And you won't want to miss next month's episode, Meet Locals in Your Server, How Local Accounts Can Cause Devastating Security Issues, with special guest Adam Maker from CyberArk. We'll dive deep into the hidden dangers of local accounts and how they can silently pose a massive risk to your organization. Gear up for another essential conversation to safeguard your digital environment. Thanks for joining us on Smells Like Identity Hygiene. Stay ahead of security risks and see you at the webinar and on the next episode. Secure your spot and your security posture today. Goodbye for now.